26 October 2002, Bullish Ambala Center. The following is talk number two by Kempo Tsultrum Gyamsa Rinpoche on valid cognition.
I wish you all Tashi Delek this morning. May everything for you be filled with auspiciousness, happiness, and excellence. And along with that, I pray that your practice of ultimate bodhicitta, which cuts through clinging to existence, and your practice of relative bodhicitta, which cuts through clinging to peace, will increase and increase, and that through this you will be of great benefit to all of the limitless number of sentient beings. Is that a good prayer? Mighty teacher, the way of your teachings is to avoid the paths of realism and nihilism, and to walk the middle way with skill and definitiveness. Dispeller of ignorance's great darkness, I prostrate before you.
To patrava namsar shing sabjin jachi kongawa koin to zangbu wezerta koinin thola sa sa to.
Tielo la jogin.
Jeba sa si chete jeba sa jizu papar sawa hindu chujin zuhi la ta yueba soju taksur tangpo soju chudang. Tumbu so la tenze chapam yueba jichapdang. Muntunbu so la meba madruba muntun so la doba dokyapte. Nene.
Yesterday, we talked a little bit about inferential valid cognition and the three modes that must be present in any reason to make it a valid reason. And so these three modes are described in Diganaga's text, The Compendium of Valid Cognition. The first concerns what is the object of inference. So what we are inferring something about is called the subject in question. It's also called the basis of inquiry, or the basis for debate if people have differing opinions about its qualities. The first mode is that when you make a logical reasoning, then whatever is the subject must be fully present in the reason.
The tetsam lamna
So one, whatever is the subject must be fully present in the reason. That's called the thesis quality. That's the first mode, is the thesis quality. The second mode is called the forward pervasion. It means that whatever is the reason must be fully present in that which corresponds to the predicate, or what we are trying to prove about the subject in question. And then the last mode is called the reverse pervasion. It means that whatever is the reason must not be present in any instant of that which does not correspond to the predicate. When the Buddha taught about valid cognition, he did so not in a way that combined everything we had to know in one place, but rather he taught it throughout the sutras in bits and pieces all over the place. And so it became a topic that was very difficult to understand, because you couldn't find all the information you needed in one particular sutra. But then there came one whose name was the glorious Diganaga, and he was incredibly skillful in being able to take all of the teachings that the Buddha gave on valid cognition and put them into one place so that later students could come and study them. And so he, in fact, it's said, composed 108 different treatises on valid cognition. But still, since there were 108 different books you had to read, it was difficult to get all of the information concisely. And so he combined all of these into one. And this is called the Compendium of Valid Cognition. And this is the one that we study, because it takes everything that's the essence into one book. But even so, this book, the Compendium of Valid Cognition, was very difficult to understand. And so people tried to read it, and just probably like you were with what was just said, it's hard to understand. And so people said, this is just totally confusing and useless. And they said Diganaga was like the teacher of darkness. And and his text, the Compendium of Valid Cognition, was like the Book of Darkness, because the more you got into it, the more confusing it was, and nobody could figure it out. So what they did was, they took his book and they wrapped it up, and they tied it on the back of the tail of a dog, and let the dog carry it all through the streets to show their opinion of this text. But Diganaga said, that's fine, that's no problem. This is a very auspicious event. It shows that just as this dog runs all throughout all the streets, so will my text spread throughout the 10 directions.
Then khaki ge ten ju te le me ba zu korpa na zo tam na yo ja chem bo tar be yam ten re yang gi.
So however many more people criticized his writing, then he said, this is that much more the auspicious connection that my teachings will spread far and wide. Because if you write something and everybody criticizes it, then that means at least they're reading it. And that means that smart people will read it too. And if they're smart enough, they'll figure it out. And then they'll really spread these teachings. And finally, there did come a student who actually could understand the meaning of Diganaga's teachings perfectly. And this was the glorious Chandrakirti. And he composed a commentary, an extensive commentary to explain Diganaga's teachings called the Commentary on Valid Cognition, Tsema Namdrel in Tibetan. And then he composed a text which was shorter than that called Gaining Certainty about Valid Cognition. And this text in Tibetan is Tsema Namge. And then he composed a text that was even more concise summary than that, called the Rigdu. And this is Riktik. And this text is called Drops of Reasoning. Just little drops, because it's very short. And that those were the three main texts that he composed. And they're called the body. And then he composed four other commentaries, which are called like the limbs of the body, the four limbs of the body. And so he composed seven commentaries in all. And these are all studied together with Diganaga's initial Tsema Do, or Compendium of Valid Cognition. So you have the compendium and its seven commentaries, and thus formed the main body of texts that future generations would learn from about valid cognition. What these three main texts are about is the same. They differ only in their length. There's a longer, more extensive commentary, and a middle one, and a shorter one.
Hirap Shirab chung chung tutsu shirab mepa la rithik sumpara.
For those who were really smart and had a lot of time to study, he composed the commentary on valid cognition, Tsama Namdral. And for those who only had sort of a medium amount of time and were a middle level of intelligence, he composed the Tsama Namge, the gaining certainty about valid cognition. And then for those who had only a little time and weren't very smart, he composed the short text called Drops of Logic. Did I? Dharma Kirti, sorry.
Dharma Kirti. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Ayang dendeng du so wangbo ramren tama som la do de hi zur yang yore. Wangbo rap la tsek tang mangbo gogu mo do de be ko to be se na wangbo rap la rek tek de ba ta. Den la tsek de le mang a nam ngi ta. Wangbo tama la tsek tang tong tsek mangbo gu be se na na nam de hi tse ma nan de hi ba yang som ba yang yore do de so.
But there's another way of explaining why Dharmakirti composed these texts and for whom. You could also look at it from the perspective of the ones who are really smart and don't need a lot of explanations, then the shortest text is for them. So the drops of logic is for them. And then the ones who are sort of middle intelligence, they need a little bit more explanation, so they get the Tsema Namge, the gaining certainty on valid cognition. And then the ones who are really slow and need lots of explanation, they need an extensive text. So the commentary on valid cognition was for them. So there are two ways to look at it.
The change is in it, and the age is in it, hint and bear a capsule. Then the number also just seems it's in it, and so under the zodi, the candayapodo, candayans and the himbuzo.
So we are at a fortunate time when, in the modern age, particularly with all of the advances that have been taking place in science and technology and research in general, we too can engage in research into the Buddhist explanations of the science of mind. And we can look at these explanations that Diganaga and Dharmakirti gave about valid cognition and compare them with what the scientists explain and see. Are they the same? Are they different? If they're different, how and why? These are important inquiries, and we also need to look and see in terms of giving extensive or not ways of explanations, which ones make the most
sense?
May the sciences that explore outside be joined with the inner science of the mind, to excellently put an end to mistaken views and confusion. And by this may auspiciousness light up the whole universe.
There
is, in fact, evidence that we can bring together the views of those who explore the outer world and those who explore the inner mind, because it used to be that scientists believed in the existence of a fundamental building block of matter, the tiniest particle that truly exists, but now their view is more coming into harmony with that of the middle way, which is that they say that they know that there is no such particle, that there is no such building block of matter. And so the more that they do their research, the more that they come into harmony with the view that outer objects are just conceptual projections.
Tene nambe lo la saru ngopo je chi chene de la takke mama me sen yo mare rikpe takche re rikpe takche den dor do bare takche thakyu sabhyu de nang sem je chene la takke thakyu tan sabhyu yo bare.
In the Buddhist examinations of phenomena, then there's no tradition of using machines or technology when you do research. You do it with logical analysis. And since this is the case, then there wasn't that much really to explore in terms of the outer world. So the examinations and analyses of outer things are the shorter part of it. More extensive and more subtle is the analysis of the inner, particularly of the mind. That's what the most focus was on.
Then the parchu jitrapa jepa tenju tsema nandrile tsosom jin tsini tenbe tsik hajan doba ayre sokju teche chapa ye tenche sombare.
De namdrile.
Namdrile.
Dharmakirti's teaching on the three modes of arisen in the commentary on valid cognition is quite short. All it says is chokchu dela kyapayi.
Chokchu teche kyapayi.
Teche kyapayi. Chesena.
Deyako. Tenche soji chusu drobjen. Decha hechun tuso chapa mundun sol dobaseyo.
Ya.
Chena ngoma yawhiyo.
De tsik tsikang de tso lung de tso hakoma.
Chapa ye. Sokju teche chapa ye.
So all it says is the reason that has the pervasion and the quality of the thesis. That's it.
So kyu se je da karara, so se je se je, so heba de hindu chujin la so je tanin din de. So kyu heba chu de tencek re, tencek so je chu se dro pa so kyu se.
The first of these, the quality of the thesis, is that whatever is the thesis, particularly the word thesis here means what you're examining, the subject, has to be the reason. So whatever is the subject in question has to be the reason, has to be fully present in whatever the reason is.
Then me ngoma te tetsong shubi ye, chujin de tetsong shubi ye, re, this is a Hindu chujin in yang, then par soja lang, Hindu chujin lang, tsik dejur ya pu yung che do, Hindu chujin lang, soja tanyin tenpare, then sok ju yu se re.
So if we really wanted to lay this out completely, then we would have to say that it is the quality of the subject in question that is the basis for the debate, but that's too long of a name. So instead of saying that, they said the subject, instead of saying that, they said the thesis. They gave the name thesis to the subject in question.
Teche chap se jute tense soji chusu tropa tasur tambore, teche chap se bate tense te tunsola chapa, tunsola yopam, chapam, tropechani jichap, tense so neba, so neba, mundun sola dopechani, menden sola mebam, dobam, menden sola le lopechani, dokap segre.
The forward provision is that the reason has to be present in all instances. All instances of the reason have to be present in what corresponds to the predicate. That's called the forward provision. And it can't be present in any instances of that which does not correspond to the predicate. That's the reverse provision. So the reverse provision is the opposite of the forward provision. Why the term thesis is used here and what it means is a subject that takes a long time to explain in valid cognition teachings, and we don't have time to go into it. It takes so much intellectual energy to understand this one little part that those who studied it in the university said it's not called thesis, it's called problem. So we're going to leave this thesis problem behind. Later you have to understand these problems. In short, whatever reason it is, it has to have these three modes. It has to have the quality of the thesis, it has to have the forward provision, and it has to have the reverse provision. So if we apply this to an example, let's say the reason that shows that sound is impermanent because it's produced, then it has the reason here that it's produced has all three modes. It has the thesis quality, it has the forward provision, and it has the reverse provision. And the omniscient Pema Karpo and the seventh Karmapa, Chudak Gyamtso, who were the main teachers in the Kagyu lineage about valid cognition, explained the definition of a valid reason in the same way. They said that a valid reason is a sign that possesses the three modes. For example, you can make the reasoning that says given suffering, it is impermanent because it is produced by causes and conditions. So this reason has all three modes because whatever is the first mode is the quality of the thesis. So this means that suffering, whatever is suffering, has to be produced by causes and conditions. So that fits. Then the second mode is the forward provision, which is that whatever is produced by causes and conditions has to be impermanent. That fits. And the reverse provision would be whatever is permanent is not produced by causes and conditions. And that fits. So when we know this reason, we can see that when we see that this reason has all three modes present, we know it's a valid reason, and we can use it to prove that all suffering is totally impermanent. So that's very helpful.
Drupzi tenze rang jujin ji seba tang, drupzi chu madaba ni, dopa goni yabarama to rangin ji imbisan, tenze rangin ji tenze siri.
And in fact, these two qualities of being produced by causes and conditions and being impermanent are not anything more than different ways conceptually of looking at the same thing. Because whatever is impermanent is definitely produced by causes and conditions. So in the essence of whatever thing it is, these have the same identity. So from among the three types of reasons that we talked about last night, this is called a reason of identity. You use two things that have the same identity. If you know that there's one present, you automatically know that the other one is present too.
Tene dunga denba tropare samben namdo chipa kapso tangbo lamsang tenze kone pingamare tanjora sunjiyam dunga dendrup yina rikpa nuzi karindo rikpa nuzi tazo hie govare rangka ting govare dunga dendrup yina kande ungudu dunga dendrup yina jodan chenla madupa tropa njura mebati govare.
When one first has clinging to suffering as being truly existent, then it might not help immediately so much to go straight into this reason that shows that it's not truly existent because it's impermanent. The first thing we have to do is to show the faults in the idea that suffering truly exists. What would the quality of suffering be if it truly existed? It would be that it would not be created by causes and conditions. It would be completely impervious to causes and conditions. Even so, once we even see the faults in saying that suffering truly exists, when you examine it and you say, well, if it's really something truly existent, what would it have to be like? And you look into it with logical reasoning and you can't find any reason that makes sense. And also you find lots of absurd consequences to the belief that suffering is truly existent. Still, it might take you several years to really understand that it's not truly existent. It's not something that can be realized right away. This
first process is called exposing the flaws. So the first step is to expose the flaws in the idea that something truly exists.
What would be the absurd consequences of that idea, to say that suffering, for example, truly existed? And then the second step is to formulate what's called a proof statement. So a proof statement means when you establish certainty in the relationship between the reason and what the reason is trying to prove, which is called the predicate. So in this case, it's the relationship between being produced and the fact that because it's produced means that it's necessarily impermanent. So you have to gain certainty in how it is that whatever is produced by causes and conditions is definitely impermanent,
whatever is impermanent is definitely produced by causes and conditions like that. That's called a proof statement. If it is, so you would say, if it is produced by causes and conditions, it is definitely impermanent. For example, a movie. For example, email. Like that. You use lots of different examples to show yourself that whatever is produced by causes and conditions is impermanent. So we have to think of lots of different reasons about and examples about to give us certainty in this relationship between impermanence and being produced. Just one example isn't enough. Just one thinking of the reason why they are inseparable isn't enough. You have to think of all different kinds of examples of things that are produced and see that because they're produced, they're definitely impermanent. So for example, if it is produced, it is definitely impermanent. For example, all of the great palaces of the kings and queens of old. So for example, all of the palaces that were built by the great kings and rulers of old are now just ruins. And they're nothing more now than a place where you buy a ticket and you go walk around and see the ruins. That's it. Whatever is produced by causes and conditions is impermanent. For example, email and outdated computer programs. Whatever was the old computer program gets outdated immediately by the new one. And even people who teach computers become unable to teach computers anymore if they haven't kept up with the new developments. Think of the great palaces that were built in Greece out of the finest stone and marble. And now they're just ruins for people to walk around. There's only just the ruins of them left, no matter how glorious they might have been. Those at least were built out of very solid and stable rock, whereas all the houses today are made out of plastic and glass. They make them ready to fall down from the beginning. Since they're built out of these flimsy materials to begin with, however big they are, however tall they are, they fall down.
And And
out of all of the houses that are built today in the forest, so today they have this tradition of, these days they have a tradition of building houses in the middle of dry trees, so that when, as soon as there's a fire, then thousands of houses burn down. And since they're made out of these flimsy materials to begin with, and they build them in the middle of a forest where there are fires, then it's like impermanence within impermanence. This is the great example of impermanence. When you build a little house like that in the middle of a dry forest. And then you would, when you're coming to certainty in this relationship between the reason and the predicate that the reason proves, then you also have the, you want to gain certainty in the reverse of this, the reverse pervasion, which is that whatever is permanent is not produced by causes and conditions. So that, you can't find it really an example of anything in the Buddhist tradition that is permanent, because everything is produced by causes and conditions. The best thing you can say is something like space. So just completely empty space is not produced by causes and conditions. So it's permanent.
Then the chun tunjur jedunga get ji chap ten chokyozu. Chun muntun jorje dunga latin the top chap ten chokyozu. Tande yapo zo, window yapo tang servare. Then rabo chona then it dunga chujin. Mata de sepe se do. Then sepe ten se jedunga matapa lam sang ton over dunga latin berhingamare. Matis.
So the first thing to do is to gain perfect certainty in the forward pervasion, to use this proof statement to help your gain help you gain certainty then in the reverse pervasion. And once you've done this ngundro, this preliminary practice, to gain certainty, then you're ready to make a logical reasoning. You've done good preparation to make a logical reasoning that says whatever, that given suffering, it is impermanent because it is produced by causes and conditions. And then that, if you've gained certainty in the relationship between the reason and what it proves ahead of time, then as soon as you make that, you're ready to prove to yourself that suffering doesn't truly exist.
Then,
the main point of the reason of nature is to help us reverse our clinging to things as being permanent. So the main way that this reason of identity or nature is used is to show the relationship of single identity between being produced by causes and conditions and being impermanent. So then you can take whatever subject you want as the subject in question, make it something that you normally cling to as being permanent, and prove to yourself that it's impermanent because it only arises due to causes and conditions.
Ne lu longju somre, te somje nan nanya lu la da, then barishimba chigre lu da, then ne da longju de zula, jarde, then matapadok.
The main things that we cling to as being permanent are our bodies, our material enjoyments, and the place where we live. So we normally have a lot of clinging to these things as being truly existent and permanent. So that's what we should apply this reason to and show us that, help us to overcome our clinging to them as being permanent by showing that they're impermanent. Whoever among those we feel close to that we cling to as being permanent, we should prove to ourselves that they are impermanent. If we prove to ourselves that enemies are impermanent, but we still cling to friends as being permanent, that's not of any benefit. If we prove to ourselves that friends are impermanent, but that enemies are permanent, then also, that also doesn't help. We have to prove to ourselves that the place where we live, our bodies, our material enjoyments, our friends, and our enemies are all impermanent. The Buddha himself, our teacher, said, out of all of the footprints, the greatest is that of the elephant. Out of all meditations, out of all contemplations, the greatest is impermanence.
Then Revu Tensek De Revu Taji Jodrapala Revu Tensekri.
The result reason is the reason that proves the existence of the cause by seeing the result. So we could make the reasoning that said, given ourselves as the subject, we had past lifetimes where we clinged to ourselves as being truly existent, because we have clinging to self now. The fact that we have clinging to self now is a result of having clinging to self in past lifetimes. So the presence of the result proves the presence of the cause.
Given
a buffalo calf, this buffalo calf had past lifetimes because as soon as it's born, it knows how to drink its mother's milk, it knows immediately where to go to drink its mother's milk, and it knows how to escape from fear. So it knows how to try to do something to escape from fear. So the fact that it has this knowledge immediately after it was born shows that it must have gotten this knowledge from some cause, and that cause was having done these things before in previous lifetimes.
Given
a baby turtle, immediately after it's been born, it has in fact lived previous lives, because as soon as it hatches from its egg on the beach, it knows how to run straight into the ocean where it will be safe. So the fact that it's scared of staying on the land and knows that to be safe it should run straight into the ocean immediately after it was born shows that it had this knowledge and had gotten accustomed to being afraid in past lifetimes. So you can watch this on any documentary about sea tortoises and see how immediately after the eggs hatch on the beach at nighttime, the little turtles run straight into the ocean as fast as they can. And as soon as they get to the ocean, then they can relax. But until they do, they run straight into the ocean.
This is the Konzo Lanjikta Yobati. Then they never Jikta, Devon Jikta Yobis and Jikta Jijo the only song of that is. Tejavangamari. Javangam and Jikta to send a joke deva Pacha Yobis.
The fear that they demonstrate in this lifetime, right at the very beginning, is the result. And in the first moment of their life, they have it, this fear. So it has to come from somewhere. And where does fear come from? It comes from having previously had fear. So having the habitual tendency to be afraid is what makes you afraid again. So the result that, so the fact that they have fear in the first moment of this lifetime shows that there must have been a cause in a previous lifetime of having the habitual tendency to be afraid. So this is, this in this way, the result reason is a proof of past life, past lifetimes. So this is one of the main kinds of result reasons that shows that the result had to be preceded by its cause. If you see a result, you can definitely infer that the cause was present before it. And there are other different kinds of result reasons that you can study more when you study about valid cognition. So this is something that you really have to read about and study more to understand thoroughly. Just to get one explanation won't be enough, because there'll be too many things that you'll be unsure about. So if you're interested in this, you should read more about it. In short, the reason of a result that is endowed with the three modes enables you to gain certainty, to prove to yourself that its cause was also definitely present. The reason of non-perceivability is the reason that's used to prove emptiness. That's the third kind. For example, the reason that you can't perceive one and you can't perceive many is a proof that phenomena have no essence. And this is one that you can use to examine basically anything. It has very wide coverage.
Dunga da nyumung juji. rangyi mi de chik to ma rangyi lin de pe se pe na mlam je dong a yin.
For example, given the disturbing states of mind and suffering, they have no inherent nature because they are neither one nor many. Just like the suffering and disturbing states of mind that you experience in a dream. For students who follow the path of reasoning, though, the first thing that we have to come to certainty in is what the flaws in the belief that suffering is truly existent would be. If we think suffering is truly existent, then we have to see what the logical absurdities in that idea are.
Demba tropa rang yin ji tropa khe lamba tsolang khowa demba tropa yina demba tropa jumsin te jujin dendro yinbe jujin dendro yinbe jumsin ji khowa dendro do khe lamba namla tene jujin demba ma drope jujin dendro la rekpe nezi tengu bare te tsawa khirab la jujin da barab zi chik sung bare jodan jin dendro yina kandendo.
So, for example, if someone thinks that samsara is truly existent because for the reason that its causes and conditions are truly existent, then you have to examine causes and conditions and see why they are not truly existent. And that's what Nagarjuna does in the first chapter of his Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way.
La nezi tembe rikpa jindang yina rikpa nezi yona kheilinga maare. Ta yenda kheilinga, kar kheilinga. Rung yobasar. Rung yobasar na, tene khova rang yinji trapare si. Rung kheilang na, tene rung ka gogre. Kanyi se nungo po tempa trapa jumsi yinjin rung thunga duksu yindu. Tene rung ka gogre. Rung ka pala tsaba khirabla, rung ka parabzi chiksung pare.
But that probably still wouldn't be enough. Just because somebody first believed that causes and conditions were truly existent, and then you showed them that they weren't truly existent, that if they followed the path of reasoning, they still would probably come up with other reasons to think that things are truly existent. For example, the reason that things come and go. So things truly exist because they truly come and they truly go. So then we have to prove that there is really no coming and going. And that's what Nagarjuna does in his second chapter called An Examination of Coming and Going. So then somebody might say, samsara truly exists because the elements truly exist. Well, then we have to prove to them that the elements aren't truly existent. That's the subject of the third chapter.
Dani koba demba trobara kainsa na chenji demba trobara sena chenji dendrob la rakpa nezi tembar yang chenji ta par rabzi chik sombar.
Then somebody might say that samsara is truly existent because the sources of consciousness truly exist. So then we have to examine the sources of consciousness and show that they're not truly existent. That's one chapter
two.
And then somebody might say that samsara truly exists because the aggregates truly exist, the skandhas. And so then we have to examine the aggregates and prove that they are not truly existent, and then take away another reason for thinking that samsara truly exists by knowing the aggregates don't truly exist. That's the subject of another chapter.
Deyin do tene jenga khowa denba trobe
Or somebody might say, well, samsara really exists because there's really arising and there's really remaining and there's really ceasing. So then that would be as the subject of another chapter to examine arising, abiding, and cessation and show that these don't truly exist. And then somebody might say that samsara really exists because desire really exists. And so then we would have to prove that samsara doesn't really exist because desire, in fact, doesn't truly exist. And that's the subject of the chapter called An Examination of Desire and the Desirous One. And it's easy to prove that desire doesn't really exist. Because if desire and the one who experienced desire were truly existent, then the question is which one would come first? If the desire came first, then you would have desire with nobody experiencing it, just be floating around out there somewhere. And if, on the other hand, the desirous one came before the desire, then you'd have somebody who was feeling desire without any desire, because the desire wouldn't exist yet. So neither case is possible, and therefore desire and the desirous one don't truly exist. And the main point also is that since the one who experiences desire has no self, because there is no truly existent self in the individual, then there's no one to experience desire, and if there's no one to experience desire, there can't be any desire either. Since in genuine reality, desire and the one who experiences it don't truly exist, and relatively they appear as dependently arisen mere appearances that appear due to the coming together of causes and conditions, then the experience of desire is, when one knows this, is open, spacious, and relaxed.
Ah,
Somebody might then say, samsara does exist because samsara is the state that you experience when you have the mistaken views and think that things are permanent, happiness, the self, and clean. When you have these four mistaken views, then you wander around in samsara. Since the mistaken views exist, then samsara exists. So then the next step is to prove, to examine mistakes. And that's what Nagarjuna does in his chapter called An Examination of Mistakes. And he proves that mistakes don't truly exist after all. The reason why the four mistaken views don't truly exist is that you can only have mistaken views if you have unmistaken ones. Mistaken views can only exist in dependence upon there being unmistaken views. But unmistaken views can only exist in dependence upon there being mistaken views. So they are only dependently existent. And since they're only dependently existent, they're not truly existent.
Then mambu logo do jatan tong la so bo logo do sinje logo to pa ma ga par marve
chenji logi tok pa ma ga par
ma ga par do
ma ga par do la
kadu ga so ta go ma ga par do lo sinje logo tok pa la den bar kem pa ma ga par
These days, many people feel discouraged because they think that they have lots of mistaken views and mistaken thoughts, and they make lots of mistakes. So if one has that, then the reason is that it's because we cling to mistakes as being truly existent. So the thing we have to do then is to read this chapter maybe 100 times, maybe 1,000 times, until we gain certainty that, in fact, mistaken views do not truly exist. Keep reading it and thinking of all the reasons why, logically, it's impossible that mistakes should be truly existent until you have certainty that that's true. It's not easy to gain certainty that mistaken thoughts don't truly exist. Might not even be able to do it in this lifetime. But we can first make aspiration prayers that we will gain certainty that mistaken views don't truly exist. And then, if it's not in this lifetime, we pray that it occur in another lifetime, in the future, in the next lifetime. And then, with that motivation, that at some point we definitely will gain certainty in this, we read the text. Others might think that samsara truly exists because the disturbing states of mind, our bodies, and the karmic actions that result from disturbing states of mind all truly exist. So if you have clinging to disturbing states of mind and bodies and karmic actions as truly existent, then you have to read the chapter called An Examination of Actors and Actions. And in this chapter, in the Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way, Nagarjuna writes, karmic actions arise from the disturbing states of mind. The disturbing states of mind have as their cause karmic actions. Bodies are the results of karmic actions. All three have no essence.
The nyumung leta lusomba tudobre, chick drop chick madroba tenda o madre, tudro imbesena madrobre, tudro imbesena madropa, tontaba, tudro imbesena nansan tudroba. Take a gugno.
In short, karmic actions, disturbing states of mind, and bodies exist only one in dependence upon the other. They're all interdependent, all three. You can't have one without the other. And since they each depend upon each other back and forth, they can't be truly existent. And this is what we have to gain certainty in.
Kansar jumi pa ta wan so ke jula so dan da gi ni ka le
Since they are only dependently existent, they are only mere appearances. And this is something that Chandrakirti writes about. I might as well get it right. That Chandrakirti writes about when he says, since things do not occur causelessly, nor arise from Ishvara, nor from self, nor from themselves, nor from something different than themselves, then things are only dependently arisen. They arise perfectly in dependence. So this is a very important verse, because what this verse teaches us is that what dependent arising means is that things do not arise from any one of the four possible extremes: self, other, both, or without cause. Since they don't arise from any of the four possible extremes, then they can't truly arise. So then what is the appearance of their arising? It is just dependent arising. So we could say, given all inner and outer things, they do not truly exist. They exist only as mere appearances because they are dependently arisen. And so with this one reason of dependent arising, we can prove that both that things don't truly exist, and also that they are just mere appearances. So that's why the reason of dependent arising is called the king of all reasons, because it can prove both that things lack any inherent existence and that they're just dependently, that they're just mere appearances.
Another
reason somebody might try to use to say that samsara truly exists is that nirvana truly exists. So they say that since nirvana truly exists, then there's samsara, because there can't be a nirvana that's real, that all the enlightened ones achieve, unless there's samsara that they get out of. So if somebody uses the reason that nirvana truly exists to prove that samsara truly exists, then you have to examine nirvana. And that's what Nagarjuna does in the chapter called An Examination of Nirvana. Since nirvana has no inherent nature, then samsara has no inherent nature. Since samsara has no inherent nature, then nirvana has no inherent nature. And since they both have no inherent nature, then they are equality. And this is something that Nagarjuna writes about when he says, samsara is not the slightest bit different from nirvana. Nirvana is not the slightest bit different from samsara.
Rock
Those who followed the Shravakayana said that samsara truly exists because the Four Noble Truths exist. And so if somebody believes that, then you have to examine the Four Noble Truths and show that the Four Noble Truths don't truly exist. And that's what Nagarjuna did in the chapter called An Examination of the Four Noble Truths. And this is something I will give a teaching about at Shambhala Mountain Center. So if you want to study this, then you can read the whole chapter with us together. So those who followed the Shravakayana had big debate with those who followed the Mahayana in the middle way about the Four Noble Truths. This was a really excellent debate. And the whole debate is laid out in this chapter. You might think, well, debate is bad. I don't like conflict. No, this debate is not good. Well, the point is that the motivation of this debate is for both sides to try to help the other. To help the other give up mistaken understandings and to understand what the authentic view is. And so if people have that type of motivation when they discuss and debate, then debate is beneficial. There's nothing bad about it at all. Then other people thought that they had a really good reason to prove why samsara truly exists. And that reason is that the Buddha exists. So the Tathagata exists. If the Tathagata exists, then there must have been a sentient being who became enlightened. If sentient beings exist who became enlightened, they had to be somewhere. Where is that? Samsara. So since the Tathagata exists, then samsara exists. So then we have to examine the Tathagata. So when you examine the Tathagata, then you examine to see whether the Tathagata has aggregates, skandhas, or not. If the Tathagata had skandhas, then it wouldn't be, he or she wouldn't be a Tathagata, he or she would be a sentient being, because they had skandhas. So you look for the point in time when the Tathagata supposedly became enlightened. When was the Tathagata enlightened? When this Tathagata or the Buddha still had skandhas or not? Well, if the Buddha had skandhas when the Buddha at the point of enlightenment, that wouldn't be an enlightened Buddha, that'd be a sentient being. But if there were no skandhas there, then what would be attaining enlightenment? Empty space. So when you examine in that way, you can't find any point when enlightenment is attained. Since there's no point when enlightenment is attained, there can't be any Buddha. When you examine subtly in this way, then you get down to the understanding that you can't actually give any name or label to the expanse of genuine reality, which is the actual enlightenment. And that's why Nagarjuna writes, permanence, impermanence, and so forth, the four. Where are these in this expanse of peace? Empty, not empty, and so forth, the four. Where are these in this expanse of peace? And also, in terms of the ultimate nature, Nagarjuna writes, whatever is the nature of the Tathagata, that is the nature of sentient beings. Just as the Tathagata has no inherent nature, so wandering beings have no inherent nature as well. And in this way, Nagarjuna takes 27 chapters to refute all of the different ideas that those who believe that things truly exist would put forward to try to prove their point, and refutes them all. And at the end of 27 chapters, then there's no more assertions that you can make about the nature of genuine reality, so you just relax in the freedom from all conceptual fabrications. So it's like that. This all comes under the reason that something is not perceivable. And when something is not perceivable, then you can say that it doesn't exist there. If it's not perceivable with something that should be perceivable, if it were there, if it's not perceivable, then you can conclude that it doesn't exist where you're looking for it. And so what we're looking for here in the middle way is essentially a truly existent essence in things. Since we can't find that essence, then we conclude that these things don't truly exist. And there are five main middle way reasons that do this. The first one is called the reason of one or of being neither one nor many. Since there's neither one nor many, then that's called the examination of the essence of something. When you examine the essence and you find that it's not one and it's not many and there's no other possibility, then you don't perceive any essence because you don't perceive it as one, you don't perceive it as many, so it's empty of essence. Then there's the second reason, which is called the examination of the cause, the reason of the Vajra thunderbolts. And this reason says you can't perceive arising, because if you perceived arising, then it would have to come from one of the four possibilities, arising from self, other, both, or without cause. Since you don't perceive any arising from any of these four possibilities, then you don't perceive any arising, you can conclude that arising doesn't truly exist. That's the reason that examines the cause, the reason of no arising from the four extremes. The next is the reason that examines the result. If a result truly arises, you should be able to perceive the arising of an existent result or a non-existent result. But an existent result doesn't arise because it's already there. It doesn't need to arise. And a non-existent result doesn't arise because that's the arising of nothing. So there is no arising of an existent result or a non-existent result. Since you can't perceive any result, then how can there be anything that arises? That's called the examination of the result, or refuting arising of something existent or non-existent. The fourth reason is called the examination of the cause and the result together. And here you look at examination of four different possibilities of arising from one result from one cause, of many results from one cause, of many results from many causes, or one result from many causes. Four different possibilities. And you can't find arising in any one of these possible permutations, so the examination of the cause and the result together also shows that there's no arising. And the fifth reason is the reason of dependent arising.
Then Pendo Chimbujiko do te Rabzini hits up the engine do he yetang Rabzijin deva yo bache tenendanda zuyore ari ari gold paint gjuriore tanda soke parjago
Shambhala
parjago parjab sande chanso yapoloko do te tabede kenda wonge zuyore tene koto go esara samado injike la kola wongo do sido.
So this, all of these reasons are explained very clearly in the, this is just a brief explanation, but they're explained clearly and thoroughly in the fundamental wisdom of the middle way. And the thing is, though, that to study the whole text takes a lot of time, and you have to go through a lot of things that are complicated and a lot of things that might be more clear. So what I did was picked out the important verses from each of the chapters and put them together with the passage in the sutras that each chapter specifically is about, and try to give an explanation of the most important verses from each one of these chapters. And this is going to be published in a book by Shambhala Publications in March called The Sun of Wisdom, Teaching on Nagarjuna's Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way. So I encourage you to read this book many times, in order to gain certainty in these reasons of the middle way.
Tene talam nga cho jitang tuni jimi jikhe yina yang tsema jiba
So the actual topic for this morning was an examination of no arising, but we started out with valid cognition and then we went into no arising naturally through that. And that makes a very good connection because, as it is said, valid cognition and the middle way, or maybe it sounds better in Sanskrit, pramana, which is valid cognition, pramana and madhyamaka, the middle way, are like two lions who are sitting shoulder to shoulder. So if you have two lions that are with their heads like this, and one's looking one direction and the other's looking the other direction, those lions have no chance of facing any kind of danger because they're looking in every direction. And so that's what the combination of valid cognition and the middle way is said to be. So we went through that a little bit this morning to give you a little taste of that.
Kanga kalo chugre, namba tamje jilo chugre, namba maimbe chulo tamje jilo chugre, tenebe yang lo chugre, kanga lo chugre.
The combination of valid cognition and the middle way is profound and incredibly helpful, but it's not like Vajrayana that you have to keep it secret. You can explain it to anybody. You can explain it to Buddhists. You can explain it to non-Buddhists. You can explain it to scientists. You can explain it to anyone you want, and it's beneficial to everyone. So it's a wonderful thing to study and to teach. And especially this book that's a summary of the most important points of the fundamental wisdom of the middle way called The Sun of Wisdom is something that everybody should read and would benefit from. And then if the Debdi Lotsarne, and so then after you finish reading this book, if you have questions about it, then you can ask. And if you have questions about the way any of this has been translated, you can ask the translator. And if the translator made mistakes, then it's very good to point out those mistakes and refute the translation. And also it's good for the translators to discuss among themselves how to translate.
So
it's like that. Now please just sing the song that was sung by the Lord of Yogis, Milarepa, called The Authentic Portrait of the Middle Way. So at the end of looking at the middle way, we should look at what the realized siddhas had to say about it, particularly the Lord of them all, who was Milarepa, who sang these Vajra songs out of the outpouring of his wisdom arising from meditation. I'll sing a few lines, and just to give you an idea of the melody, then we can start over together.
Yeah.
From the standpoint of the truth that's ultimate, besides no blocks, there are not even Buddhas. No meditator and no meditated. No paths and levels traveled and no signs. From the standpoint of the truth that's ultimate, besides no blocks, there are not even Buddhas. No meditator and no meditated. No paths and levels traveled and no signs. And no fruition bodies and no wisdoms. And therefore there is no nirvana there. Just designations using names and statements. All animate inanimate the three realms. Unborn and non-existent from the outset. No base to rest on, do not coexist. There is no karmic act, no maturation. So even the name samsara does not exist. That's the way these are in the final picture. But oh, if sentient beings did not exist, what would the Buddhas of three times all come from? Since fruition with no cause impossible. So the standpoint of the truth that's relative is samsara's wheel, nirvana, past all grief. It all exists, that is the sage's teaching. Then what exists appearing to be things? And their non-existence, pure being, emptiness, are essentially inseparable one taste. And therefore there is neither self-awareness nor awareness of what's other anywhere. All of this a union vast and spacious, and all those skilled in realizing this. The phenomena they see pure being, and out of this compassion just emerges. Retention powers, fearlessness, and all the qualities embodied by a Buddha.
Just come as if you had a wishing jewel. This is what I, the yogi, have realized.
Then the woman young Tapa Juba Tilly, Don Tambang Condenica Madropa, Consultant Condenica Yoba. Now and the La Gadro Zuchu Mazeno, Nando in me in the tour. Somarete, Oma Tanjur Jello, Randong Jello, Tanjur Jello. Nam Himando, Yin Tong Simbane, then Yin Dong the Degree, Sakin Zokin the Degree. Hajan Samon da Jajembore.
This song, The Authentic Portrait of the Middle Way, starts out by explaining things from the perspective of the Middle Way Consequence School, which is to say that first it explains how samsara does not truly exist, nirvana doesn't truly exist, how they exist only as mere appearances in relative reality. And so if we don't engage in trying to create anything or trying to stop anything, then we can realize their true nature being appearance and emptiness undifferentiable. The first explanation is of emptiness, the second of appearance, and ultimately they are appearance and emptiness undifferentiable. And then when we get down to the part in the song where Milarepa sings, they do not see consciousness, they see the wisdom. From then on, it's an explanation according to Shentong, according to Mahamudra and Dzogchen. So this one song contains all of these different explanations, and it is therefore concise and incredibly profound.
Samundan jajambunjuan juru.
And out of this, compassion just emerges. Retention, powers, fearlessness, and all the qualities embodied by a Buddha just come as if you had a wishing jewel. This is an explanation of how the qualities of enlightenment manifest. And if one connects this with the explanations in the treatise on Buddha nature, the Gyulama, particularly the chapters on enlightened, first the chapter on qualities and then the chapter on enlightened activity, then you get an explanation that is profound, subtle, and vast. If one wants to perform the benefit of others, if one wants to accomplish the state of enlightenment, which can perform the benefit of others in a limitless way, then we should read this chapter on enlightened activity many times from this text, the Treatise on Buddha Nature. And if you have questions, well, how does one attain enlightenment? How can I ever attain enlightenment? Then you should, if you have questions and doubts like that, then you should read the chapter called Enlightenment from this text many times. The explanation in the fourth Vajra point from this text, the Treatise on Buddha Nature, which teaches about the three reasons why all sentient beings have the Buddha nature, its 10 aspects and the 9 examples for how it is present even though it's covered over by fleeting stains, probably things you all know have heard explanations about a lot. How much certainty you have in this, I'm not sure, but you probably heard the explanations a lot. So it's like that. Now it's okay to rest a little bit. If you let go and relax, and that's how you rest, then that's meditation. If you... If you rest and at the same time you're thinking a lot about the future, that's not rest. That just makes you more tired.
May it defeat the enemy wrong. So the golden sun of the great east, may the lowest kind of the radiance wisdom, may the dark ignorance of sentient beings be dispelled. May all beings enjoy profound, brilliant glory. Kuye tashishu, yana truchu, sungye tashishu, tadra dreme, tuge tashishu, yawe kusunto je tashishu. Nyemor dele, tsendele, nyeme kunyan dele ching, nyinsen tatu dele, kuncho sungye tashishu. Sarva mangala.
Let's sing the song, All These Forms.
Yeah. All these forms, appearance, emptiness, like a rainbow with its shining glow, in the reaches of appearance, emptiness. Just let go and go where no mind goes. Every sound is sound and emptiness, like the sound of an echo's roll in the reaches of sound and emptiness. Just let go and go. Mind goes. Every feeling is bliss and emptiness, way beyond what words can show. In the reaches of bliss and emptiness, just let go and go where no mind goes. All awareness, awareness, emptiness, way beyond what thoughts can know. In the reaches of awareness, emptiness, let awareness go where no mind goes. Let awareness go.
That's the whole essence of the practice right in that song. It's the whole essence of the view. But ultimately, we have to transcend view and meditation both.